Okay.
Wendy Graves with the city of Springfield, Missouri.
Oh, great. Okay. Springfield. Okay. And this is the time when we always warn everyone, mics have gotten so good that you pick up everything. And if you're on a headset or some sort of mic, hopefully a very quiet room. And if you put us on silence, mute, that's one thing, but don't please put us on hold, because then we'll get your music. And the only way I can combat that is to talk over it or mute everyone. We like to keep open mics, so your mic is open. So if you get a phone call, keep that in mind, because we've had some interesting conversations with people we don't know. So we like to keep that at bay. So, well, there may be people joining us, but let's go on. This is a very eventful week, as you all probably have noted. It finally arrived. The RFP came out. We maybe could have done better, but we got $4 million, which isn't bad. $4 million means there'll be 20 grants approved, and we'll go with that. And we're going to be talking for the next month. Of course, the grants came out on the 15th and due on June 10th. We're going to be talking till then all about the response to the RFP. Today we're going to be talking about your strategy, what to do and what to do before EPA puts their show on, how to get your team together. We're going to take some deep breaths and try to make your job as easy as possible. Then on May 8th, we're going to be discussing the ranking criteria, and that's when we start to get into the weeds about your specific response. On May 22nd, we're going to have a special session, and it may be in fact, it may be a webinar that we're going to talk about things that you have to watch for, do's and don'ts of responding to your grant. And then, of course, just before it's due on June 5th, we'll do a kind of a wind-up and tips. So now I'm going to remind everyone, these mics are really sensitive, so if you put us on mute, and most places it's #6, but please don't put us on hold, okay? So otherwise we're going to pick up all your conversations in the room. So with that, let's get started. And Heather, do you want to give us a rundown of what's going on in Washington?
Yeah, absolutely. So I hope you all saw the email that we pushed out on the listserv, just to remind you guys that, or to announce to you guys that the RFP did come out. If you guys received a reminder for this PLC call, either coming from Mike's and you or from myself, there will be either the RFP attached or a link to the RFP, so that information is readily available for you guys to begin to look at and work on. You know, headquarters did want us to remind you guys that they will be holding their webinar to kind of break down and go through the RFP, and that'll be May 1st at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Again, that's May 1st at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, and we'll push that out again as a reminder as it gets a little bit closer to that date. But put that on your calendar, because that'll be a great information session. They also wanted us to share with you guys another little piece of information. If you haven't seen it already yet, they have officially announced when the next National Brownfields Conference is going to be. So this is a nationwide conference for anybody working in the brownfields area. So this will be December 11th through the 13th in Los Angeles, California. So again, that's December 11th through the 13th in LA. And, you know, they kind of said to us they want to see a really great turnout of environmental workforce and development and job training people there. They want us to really help sing the praises of the fantastic workforce that we help provide these people that work in the brownfields every single
day. Ken Alexander.
So go ahead and put that on your calendar and keep it in mind as you look for maybe potential things to continue on and do.
Okay. On the HMTRI front, we're still working on the annual grantee meeting, which is a go. Heather, do you want to give us an update on that?
So, yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Mike. So, you know, at this time, We are still working with hotels to try to select a date and sort of choose what will be the time that we can have that all grantee meeting. But keep an ear out for that as well. We'll send you guys information as soon as we have it available. This is our annual all grantee meeting. It's held every year over on the East Coast side of the state, sort of in the D.C. area. A really fantastic opportunity for you to be able to network with other people that work in the job field, along with the regional coordinators and other HQ staff as well, all turn out for this great event. So we'll keep you guys informed as we come with more information. But at this point, we're brainstorming topic ideas. We are looking at a couple of different dates. And so we'll be sending out some information to you guys, as well as some asking for some assistance on feedback on some of the different topics that we are selecting, and to help us know if we're missing anything that you think would be really valuable to where you guys are currently at right now.
Yeah, on the all-grantee meeting, you don't have to be a grantee. If you're interested in starting a program, if you're going to submit a proposal, you're invited. If you're thinking of submitting a proposal, you're also invited. If you're an alumni, you're invited. Of course, if you're an EPA person, you're invited. We've got some retirees coming. We have all the regional coordinators coming, and we've got the administrators attending. So this is a chance to sit down face-to-face, one-on-one with the people that you'll be working with or maybe working with in the future. And of course, it's a kind of a boot camp. We have 2 days of sessions, breakouts, and plenaries. If you can get there, everything else is pretty much paid for. You have to, the working breakfast, working lunch, you would be dinner on your own and transportation on your own. Otherwise, everything is covered. So that is going to be coming up, and we'll be sending out notices, and it's a participatory program, so we're going to be asking you what you want to hear in the program as a matter of course, what kind of breakouts you might want, plenary. So that's all going to be happening in the next month. But on your calendar as you're planning, see if you could snag some transportation money to Alexandria in September, August area that time. And, of course, the Brownfields meeting, which is coming up in December that we talked about, we would like to assemble a panel. There's a call for ideas that will be in the post-session notes, and you can access and send in your own idea and call for idea, and we'll provide instructions on how to do that in the notes. But we would also like to have an HMTRI Environmental Workforce Development Job Training panel. And we're going to be having a booth, which will be an Environmental Workforce Development Job Training panel presentation with an associated booth that you'll all be able to use as a home base and bring materials to. But for that panel, if you think that you will be going to the Brownfields, National Brownfields in Los Angeles in December, when I send the notes out, why don't you just do a response and say, please consider me for the panel. We'd like to get about 4 or 5 grantees to highlight their program, talk about what they're doing and the positives and challenges that they faced. And we thought it would be a good submission idea. So if we can get a panel together, we'll submit that idea. It's no guarantee that it'll happen, but it certainly, I think, would be a positive thing to have out there, because there's a lot of communities. We're really actively only in 50 communities, and there's thousands of communities out there that might be thinking of this, and they'd like to talk to and hear people that are actually doing the work. So think about it, and like I say, if you think you're going to be in Los Angeles in December 11th to the 13th, just do a response and say, please consider me for that panel. No obligations, and of course we don't know that we'd be accepted if we send that in, but we'll send in a group panel discussion if we get enough grantees. Well, today let's talk about how we're going to face this request for proposal. It's a big job, and we only have till the 10th to do it. But rather than jump into the weeds this week, we're going to wait till the next session. What we want to do is look at your strategy. We want to say, how can I make my job easier, and how can I respond to this? And in response to that, well, for the best results, what you want to do is assemble a team. And some of these people may be doing the same thing. You want to get as many people as you can involved. Of course, you need a project coordinator. That may be you. It may be someone else. That project coordinator is going to be your enforcer. They're going to set meetings, hopefully every week from now till December 10th. They'll be setting some schedules and deadlines for people to follow. And in fact, we do this at HMTRI. Every Wednesday, we have a conference call. Whatever people promise the week before, they need to deliver before the next Wednesday. So you want to keep the project on schedule, and you want to, as we go along, you'll see why you need to do that. So this project coordinator is the enforcer. He or she will also be the overall editor. When this thing is finished, they're going to have the last glance at it to be able to review it and make sure it all makes sense, everything fits together. And the reason you need to do that is you may have multiple people doing different parts of this. And whenever you do that, you have this issue of discontinuity. And it's another reason why you want to have these weekly meetings. As far as your team members, you certainly need a grant administrator, and we'll talk about that. They need to be authorized organization representative, though, AOR, and we'll talk in a second about the AOR and about making sure that you're registered on grants.gov. But you need someone in an organization, whether it's yours or a partner that you're working with, that is familiar with grants.gov, with SAMS, and is prepared to submit the grant. So you need that person. You need a budget person. Often it might be the same person as a grants administrator. This is going to be the person that will be familiar with indirect costs, which we can charge this year. They'll be checking the budgets. They'll be coordinating these budgets to make sure your numbers work out. One of the biggest problems that as the EPA readers evaluate these grants, they see budgets in one part of the grant and they see the other budget and they don't match. Instant negative points. So you can't have a mismatch of budgets where one person is saying one thing and then when you tally it up, it doesn't work. So you need some sort of a budget administrator. It could be being done by the grant administrator. That's one set of people. You need someone who's a technical person. We're not all OSHA certified. We're not all EPA people. You need to have one or two or a bunch of people who can provide technical assistance when you get to start talking about curriculum and cost of training. You may, and this gets where it gets a little sticky, you may want to get volunteers who are consultants to contribute as advisors to this project. Because in this grant, you're going to have to come up with training costs. And unless you're doing this all in-house, you may need some input from trainers. Now, of course, as we'll talk about later, that person, you cannot do a quid pro quo where he's going to write your grant for you and he'll get the job later. We've talked in the past and we'll talk in the future about contracting regulations. They can certainly be an advisor and they could advise you of what certain courses, if you're going to be having to provide 1910-120 HAZWOPER, how much is that going to cost per student? You may have to go out and get some quotes. Ideally, if you have time, get out and get your quotes now. And this is a great time to, you don't have to contract before the grant is awarded. You put in your RFP when you're looking for contractors to deliver the technical training that this is contingent on you getting the grant and on your schedule and the trainer's schedule. So you put those two clauses in there and it'll cover you, but it'll give you a great opportunity to find out what the courses you're teaching are going to cost and what's involved in those courses. So I would say two things. You can send out RFPs. You could suggest that someone be on your advisory board who's a consultant, and you'd have to make it clear this is in no way going to give you an edge when we get the grant. You can be an advisor, a technical advisor, but it doesn't mean that because you provide assistance to the grant that you're going to get any kind of edge up on the contracting. So you need a technical trainer to help you with that. This is another area, and we've been talking for the last year in the PLCs about outreach. This is going to be the most time-consuming and hardest thing you're going to do. You've got, and you're going to see it if you've already started reading the evaluation criteria, you need a lot of community outreach. You need a lot in terms of assessment. labor market assessment, community assessment, which we've been talking about, working with employers, recruiting advisors, recruiting partners, recruiting government organizations, who's out there that you can work with, who is going to visit the web, who's going to visit the Goodwill, who's going to visit the Health and Human Services to coordinate their leveraging and what they can do for you. Who's going to do all this? Who's going to do the work on the labor market and demographics that you need to have in the grant? So here is an area of personnel in your team, your outreach staff. You may have three or four people, if you can get them, as many volunteers as you can. And these will be people who will be doing outreaching. And they're going to be going out to these partners. They're going to be doing signing up your leveraging. And as you see, this is really difficult for one person to do. It has been done, but it's very, very tough. So I would say anyone you can enlist in helping you with this, get them on board and tell them we're going to have weekly update meetings and what's going to be involved. And everyone, once you get them on board, everyone's going to be assigned a task. And this is when we get into the webinar. It's very important that you not only read before the webinar the RFP, but attend the RFP, the webinar that'll be done next Wednesday, and it'll give you an edge up on what they're talking about. When I send the notes out, I'm going to include some things in there about previous questions that were asked as a result of the webinar. What they're going to do at EPA is they'll have numerous PowerPoints, and they're going to go through that RFP point by point and talk to you about it. As far as how you respond to it, that's not something to do. So what you're going to want to do is go to the webinar and look at the requirements. They will send out, after the webinar, some PowerPoints, and usually they'll send out questions and answers to those questions. So you may want to get some questions prepared and notes as you go along. I'm going to attach to the notes this week some of the questions that were asked in the past after the webinar was done. But you want to prepare yourself because this is your big chance to talk to the director of this program and get an answer on very specific issues. And they a lot of them often are centered around curriculum. If you're thinking of teaching some curriculum, is it allowable cost? So that's something that's you prepare for. So attend the webinar, and ideally, any of the principals that you get and recruit for this team that we just discussed, have them sit on the webinar, particularly the technical people. The grants people should sit in on it and just give them the address and say, can you sit in and listen to this webinar? It'll give them a good overview of what they can expect and what's going to have to happen. So that, as I said, is going to be extremely important. Once you get into the grant itself, and we're talking today about an overview of how you may want to approach responding to this grant. When you attend the webinar and you look at the RFP, I would specifically, of course, you want to look at what can be funded, what kind of courses you can teach. And then you want to start looking at deconstructing each of the evaluation criteria. And you want to start picking those apart. We have different people do different methodologies when they do that. We've had some that use the old method. They take index card, and whenever there's a question asked or a statement of question or inquiry, they put it on an index card, and they have a table full of index cards. And then they take those index cards and they start assigning them to people. Okay, who's going to cover this? Who's going to do this? And this is what we need to find out. Other people are a little more in the digital age, and they'll start developing Excel files or Word files, and they will deconstruct every question and every criteria, and they will put a column there, and that has to be filled in under that column. And, of course, they will assign it to people to work on those projects. When we look at those ranking criteria, Now, over the course of the last year, we've talked about many of the I'm going to interrupt someone. I have to be real quiet because we got open mics. So we'll try to do that for a while. I like to keep them open in case anyone has questions, but you have to be real quiet because these mics are really powerful. When we look at the ranking criteria, the top three are community need, which we've spent a lot of time on. This is the community assessment, labor market assessments. That is 20 points. Community and employer partnerships, which we've talked about tremendously, that's 26 points. And of course, as I discussed earlier, if you can get some employers and advisors on your team to help you write the grant, this is kind of like a little secret tip. You can then put in your grant that they were collaborating, your advisors and your employers were involved in the development of the grant. That is very important to a reader because it's one of those little hidden things that they want them to be involved and participate, but it doesn't really come right out and say, you must do this. But if you can get in that early stages, try to find some advisors. And of course, you might have a training organization that is your advisor. And they're going to be participating in the development of the grant and providing you advice in writing it. And you might get some community members or someone from City Hall that's going to be providing you with community awareness information and some demographic information. If you can get an employer or someone from the WIB to be on your advisory committee, now maybe these people won't attend every meeting, but you'll get them on your advisory committee to provide you some labor market information. You want to be able to involve them because you want to be able to put them in your grant, in your narrative. So community need is one of the most important things. The employer community partnerships is the second most. It's actually the most important thing with 26 points. And this is working with the community, working with the employer, coordinating with local projects, as we've discussed in some of the PLCs. You've got to find out, and if you're working with City Hall, particularly an environmental department or contracting department, you'll find out where the brownfields are, what projects are going on in your community. When you pick a target community, you're going to want to pick a target community where there's activity going on, some brownfields, some construction activity, a neighborhood that's underserved, but there's work being done. In the process of choosing your team, and some of these people may come and go as part of your team, you're using them to get you information to respond to a narrative. You could actually give them what EPA is requesting in the RFP and say, we need some guidance in responding to this. Can you help us? And we need this by next week, that type of thing. So the program capability, of course, is 20 points. So these first three things I mentioned are 66 points, so more than half of the evaluation criteria. Those are very important and to focus on. But having said that, when we look at the people who get the grants and the ones that don't get them, many times we'll get a response of, I missed it by 2 points, and I got 90, and I missed it by 2 points. What they're telling me is you had to get 92 to survive, to make the cut. So what we're saying is it's not good enough to just score well on the first three. You've got to score well on all of them. So you can't neglect any requests. And that's why we go back to the index cards or the Word or Excel file. You need to answer every question because the evaluators are trying to do this as objectively as possible. They're going to look at every question and they're going to say, did you answer it? And how did you answer it? Did you answer it sufficiently? Did you do an excellent job on it? And they're going to start assigning points to all your answers. So never skip a question. And even if you don't think it applies to you, you still have to answer it. You have to provide some answers. So you need, and they'll talk about this next week, you need to respond to every question that's asked. So when we talk about the training program and its description, this is, for example, where your advisor, your technical advisor, is going to be able to respond to those questions. In terms of structure, program structure, your outreach people are going to work with you on this, and your overall coordinators. What kind of outcomes are you expecting? What kind of recruitment and screening are you going to be doing? What kind of support and what are you looking forward to in terms of sustainability? And when you get into this, writing this grant, you have to put a mindset on that this grant is not a grant that will end when the money ends. You have to put this mindset on is that you're creating a program in your community that's going to go on after the grant ends. And whether it ends or not is irrelevant. You've got to have a mindset of this is seed money to get our program started. Once we get it started, we may get money from the private foundation, from the WIB. We may get money from the legislature. We may get it from a combination of funds, or we may merge it into a larger organization if it turns out that we can't find funds to continue by ourselves. We may just merge into a larger organization, or we may be in a large organization already, and if EPA funds either stop or we miss a cycle, we can continue in this organization and reapply and continue the program. So always think of it not as a grant that when the money ends, we end. You can think of it as a continuing established capacity, because that's what EPA is looking at, and that's what they want you to be doing. So that gets us into leveraging. It's only 3 points, but 3 points can be a make or break. You're going to want to talk about who's leveraging. Now, in very large organizations, they're leveraging internally. They have lots of programs going on, and some of the other programs are contributing to their program. But you have to make sure that because you think it doesn't mean it's true. The only reason it's true as far as the evaluators go is if it's in writing in your narrative. So you can't assume that anyone knows anything about your program. And you have to assume that everything they know about your program is in black and white on your proposal. So if you're getting leveraging from some other source or an internal source or something that you think, well, that's not a big deal, it is a big deal. If you're getting drug screening from the WIB, it's got to be in there. It's a leveraged service. If you're getting a bank that's providing financial literacy, it's got to be in there. Whether or not every time you're getting leveraged services that EPA doesn't fund, it should be in there. Or if it's supplementing and adding to EPA's funding, you also have to have it in there. And of course, as I talked early, budget is all important. You've got to make sure your numbers work out. That's a big no-no where your budgets say one thing in your narrative and your budget, when you wind it up, says something else. It just doesn't work. So as far as evaluation and how you approach these ranking criteria, this is something. And again, as you listen to this, you're probably saying, I can't do this alone. And you're right. And so, as I said, you get your team together as soon as possible. There is a little stealthy, as you read through this RFP at the end, it's called Other Factors. And it's something that they downplay, but it's very important, very, very important. It's called Other Factors. And what it essentially does is it allows EPA to jump your proposal to the front of the line, depending on certain circumstances. It's not necessarily a objective review, but more subjective. And the reason this exists is to try to level the playing field. Over the last PLCs, we've had many inquiries. We're small. We're Native American and oriented. We're rural. Rural brownfields are the toughest there are. How can we compete against someone out of Chicago or Boston? How do we do that? Well, you can compete because of other factors. They try to even out urban and rural environmental workforce development job training programs. Not that it's not that all of them are, it's not that it's going to be 50-50, but there's going to be consideration given to tribal areas, rural areas, mine-scarred lands, difficult areas where there's not a lot of population to screen or not a lot of applicants that will be jumping into your program. So they do give, they do that in consideration. There's also a level playing field, and the same thing applies to new and old grantees. The someone, if you're just applying and this is your first year, say, how do I compete with someone who's been doing this for 10 or 15 years? They've got all their partners set up. They've got everything, their everything set up. Well, the way they level the playing field is in two ways. One is they do consider that you are first year, that you have not got that experience, and that is another factor. They also will, I don't want to say punish, but look poorly on a grantee that submits the same grant. If it's the grant that was submitted the last time and it's just a Xerox copy of it or very similar, and it's resubmitted and nothing new and no new words, nothing changed, they're really going to scrutinize that grant. And the same people do the evaluations year after year, and that's happened in the past. And, of course, the regional coordinators will make a point of it. Do not regurgitate old grants. Now, the technique you use to develop the grant or the grant proposal, if you've got a system that works for you, that's great. You can do that, but make sure that your words are different, the way you approach it are different. You may be teaching similar courses because your demographics, maybe your target community may change or your demographics may change. You may have more cultural disparities in your program. You may have to offer different courses. But that's something that, again, when we look at other factors, that's important. They also want to consider whether if you're in an extreme poverty zone, if 20% or more of the people are by federal definitions that are in the RFP, if they're in a poverty zone, they're going to consider that in the target community. These grants are environmental justice oriented, therefore underserved, underemployed populations. And of course, often brownfields are located in those areas. So I would say the ideal target community that you're going to be working in may be a poverty identified zone. There may be some brownfields or Superfund site in the area. It may even be designated, and this is a good place to go, is designated as an opportunity zone. IRS this last 2 years developed these IRS opportunity zones, and there's thousands of them across the country, and they are designated to provide focus. And these opportunity zones are basically the 20% zones, often have environmental degradation in them. So when you go to City Hall and your outreach person goes to City Hall, you're going to want to see, is where I'm thinking of working in an opportunity zone, what is the poverty rate there? What is the unemployment rate? Again, this will all fit almost double duty. It'll help in your community assessment early on that we talked about, and it'll help in your other factors. And so it's again, something you should consider. When we talk about double duty and something may occur in the front end talking about assessment and later on in other factors, one thing you have to keep in mind is assume that they're going to tear apart each of these ranking criteria. And because you said something somewhere in the grant, you have to repeat that somewhere else if it applies to that request for information. In other words, because you said it once, you can't assume that that's in their memory and another applicable request for information. Oh, he said that before, so I take all that into consideration. That does not work. You've got to, excuse me, you have to repeat it. So that is another strategy you have to consider when you're doing this. Before you get too far into, and we're talking about these general questions, but before you get too far into your curriculum, and say, we're going to teach air pollution. No, you're not, because look early when you review this RFP, look early, and I'll put in the page numbers to look at. The way Environmental Workforce Development works is that different program offices contribute to it. The majority of the money comes from hazardous waste, OSWER, $3.9 million. That leaves $100,000 from other program offices. And those program offices, of course, are listed and they'll be in the notes. They include solid waste, Superfund, wastewater treatment, emergency response, health and safety training. Not solar per se, but evaluating cleaning up solar sites on contaminated property. And all these other offices, while OSWER puts $3.9 million in, everyone else puts in $100,000. So most of these are $10,000 or $20,000 for wastewater, $20,000 for emergency supply. You don't see air in there. You don't see radiation in there. If you base your whole program on that, they can't really fund that officially. They can't. There is no contribution to the program from that program offices, and they can't fund it. And worse is they can't say, okay, we just can't fund it. So if they accept your proposal, that training would not be funded. You would have a choice of getting funding from somewhere else or not canceling that course or revising that course, but they just would not fund it. They would take that out of your grant. So it's one of the general word of cautions. When you look at this, keep that in mind. Don't go somewhere that is not, for example, don't go on solar installers. Don't do that because it's preparation of contaminated property for solar farms, or don't go into HUD programs that would be concerned with insulation. No, because they can't fund that. Now, they can fund a lot of things, and they do under the hazardous waste banner. Lots, just about everything you could think of can kind of squeeze in there unless you're very specifically out of it. So they've managed over the years and in the last several years when this took place, not only a few programs were impacted because they were just too far out of the funding zone. So, but just keep that in mind when you're deciding and you talk to your technical people. You don't, no sense in getting an air person in there to talk to you about a great air curriculum, or a radiation person, or someone who wants to be a solar installer. Just, I would suggest just don't even go there. And there are plenty of other places to work on. And of course, in the coming weeks, if you have questions, you can write us, and we'll get the answer to those questions. But on Friday, we'll send you some questions from last year's RFP. Focus in on them. You'll be able to get copies of the slides and probably questions that were asked from EPA also. And so that'll bring you along the way. But if I have a message today, it's basically, one, get as many people involved as you can. Try to get some advisors on the outside to participate in some of your meetings. Ask them if they'll come to the meeting, if they could volunteer some time, if they could provide you with some advice. You don't necessarily have to get quotes from people, but could have them provide you with estimates of what things might cost with no conditions of being getting any kind of remuneration out of that. But as big a team as together, when you identify the people that you can count on and have the time to devote to this project, start assigning them the evaluation criteria, see who can do, once you pick apart all these topics, okay, who wants to cover this? Who wants to cover that? Who wants to do a labor market assessment? You know, who wants to go out and talk to the WIB and then report to us next week and do a write up a WIB, a blurb on that? And these early stages is when you're getting all of this organized. And once you get your team together, your man hours and this thing is going to start constructing itself. The team leader is going to take these bits and pieces and put them into semi-coherency. And then, depending on whether you have a grant writer, if you're a large organization, you have a grant writer, you pass those things on to the grant writer with them coming back with questions. If you don't have a grant writer, you have to find the person who got all A's in English and creative writing, and you want them to write the whole grant. You don't want to submit all these little bits of data pieces. You want to have one person. It's got to be coherent, and that's when, you know, the beginning of end of May, they're going to have to sit down and just start writing the section by section, start writing these grants, and that's one person because they know what they've written, and they know the topic area. Think of all of the people on your team members are consultants. Think of them as advisors and consultants. They're going to feed it to the team leader, who is then going to say, well, you covered this, but not enough. I need more meat in terms of what you're doing with the WIB, or I need more information on who you've talked to in City Hall, or what we're going to be getting out of Health and Human Services. That's what the team leader is going to be doing. When the team leader gets all that data together and puts it and takes your text as a consultant, puts it in some form, then they pass it over to whether it's the grant writer or the writer or whoever is really good at putting this whole thing together. And of course, the last look comes at the budget people and the submitter. And I didn't talk about it, and we're over time, but I'm going to talk quickly. Very, very important, and everyone will tell you, and they talk about it, DUNS. You got to get a DUNS number. You got to have the System of Awards Management, it's called. It's called SAM. You're going to hear the word grants.gov a lot. And you need to probably go to grants.gov on your own. They got a tutorial. They'll give you a lot of information on submitting the grant. But basically, this grant has to be submitted, cooperative agreement has to be submitted on grants.gov. To operate through grants.gov, you've got to have a DUNS number. After you get the DUNS number, you have to go to the System of Award Management. That's called SAM. And you've got to be registered. And if you have not submitted a grant in the last year, your account may be inactive. So you've got to make sure that your SAM's account is active and that you've got everything in place. You've also got to make sure that whoever submits this grant, you just can't go submit it. Whoever is they call it the e-biz person. This is the person in your organization that's working with grants.gov and with SAMs. This is the person that's interacting with the feds. That person has to either be the authorized representative or has to make someone the authorized representative. And that person's name has to be on the grant. So what I'm basically saying is do a dry run and go to your organization and say, when was the last time you submitted a grant? And if they say, well, we did one about a year ago, well, could you please, and you might ask them to do this, do a dry run and put his passcodes into SAM, put his authorization logins into SAM, just to give you peace of mind. The last thing you want to do is spend 3 man months on a grant that you can't submit. And you don't want to find that out on May 9th or May 7th. So you've got to just go to that person and say, you know, if he said, well, we submitted one last week, everything's good to go. This is the person who's authorized, and he'll be the person or she'll be the person that will submit this grant, and we're good. Everything's fine. If that's the case, great. If it's not the case, if there's any doubt, just let them do a dry run. Find out who's the authorized organization representative who will be submitting the grant. That's the person that EPA will interact with that said you got the grant. That person has to be designated with all their information. So just make sure it's all in place. Now, people will tell you it takes about a month. If you're starting from scratch and don't have a DUNS number, it's about at least a month to do all that. So if you don't have any of this, I've got two suggestions. One, you've got to start right now and go to grants.gov or get your grants person to do that. Make sure if you got a DUNS number, go through the whole registration process. There is a tutorial on how to do this. There's a help number all of that we'll put in the notes, and it'll also be, they'll be talking about this next week. Here is another alternative. Find a partner who is doing it. Okay, if you're sitting there and you just listen to what I said and said, this is hopeless. And I would say, don't give up. I would say, let's put some effort into finding a partner that would be willing to expand their program to include our program. So this might be a Goodwill. It might be a Jobs for Youth. It might be a youth build. It might be a WIB. Governmental organizations and nonprofits they're eligible to submit. It may be what they call a CDC, a Community Development Corporation. So if you think this is really, all of this is just above your allowable time to spend on it, spend a little bit of time checking out and calling some of these organizations. And if you could find a training organization, even better, or a workforce organization like a Community Development Corporation or a Workforce Investment Board, consider, we've got a grant that we would like to submit. So beyond our capabilities right now, would you consider partnering? And if they say, well, come on, let's have a meeting, go into them with everything I just talked about, armed with all the information, and build a team that includes their team. And let them do the submission, and let them handle all the accounting. And they may have their own budget office, and they may have their own accounting office, and you will be part of that organization as perhaps a project leader or a partner. You might be like a sub-partner that will work with them, and all of everything I just said will be perhaps reduced significantly. So that's the other thing. I would submit no matter what. Often this is a learning experience. It's in the old days, EPA would suggest people often don't get it on the first time. They get it the second time. You get to have debriefings with EPA. You get on the track. Sometimes when people get started, their local organization said, well, sorry you didn't get it, but we got some money, and we'd like you to do some planning over the next year. We'd like you to maybe even start a program. We'd like to work with you on this. I like the idea. The mayor say, we need something like this. We could dig up more money than you're going to get from EPA. So think about that and submit. Use this as in those cases, a learning experience to basically get into the system and get the ball rolling. And definitely something to consider. But don't get discouraged and take this thing a kind of a step at a time. Are there any questions out there? I'm past my 30 minutes I was going to spend on this, but I wanted to get you all going and looking at it from a distance at first, so you're not just jumping around as you approach this thing. And I think it'll help you in the long run.
Michael, this is Madeline. I had a meeting with some of our broader partners this week after the RFP came out, and one of them asked if I knew, on average, how many applications the EPA receives. Do you happen to have that information?
Well, this is a strange year because in the old days, I would say it would be about 40 to 50, which is pretty good odds. They would give about 17. I would say it might be more like 60. Everyone can apply. So that is an issue. We're kind of working blind this year. I was really hoping they would award maybe more like 40 grantees, but it's 20. You work with what you've got. I would say 20. I think typically one out of four might get it.
Okay.
Something that will give you a ballpark, I think, to work
yep,
with.
Thank you.
It's not one out of 100, so that's encouraging. Yeah.
Hi, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
This is Ann Black from Santa Fe Community College. Hello?
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me? Oh,
okay.
Hey, we're working with Los Alamos National Labs to place students in our participants and their legacy cleanup efforts. And we had added like a one-day radiation protection class to the participants we're training near Los Alamos. Would that, I just heard that, you know, you don't get money from the radiation folks. Is that going
right.
to put us at a disadvantage?
I would rephrase it somehow, or I would
okay.
be careful with it just to be safe. And can you work it in? Now, for example, you cannot, theoretically, you can't teach construction, but OSHA 10 is a construction course, but in OSHA 10, you're teaching health and safety. So everyone, most people have what they call OSHA 10. It's general construction, but it includes
right.
health and safety. Now, if you could slip that in somehow into a curriculum associated with hazardous materials cleanup,
uh-huh.
I could see them saying, well, you know, that's not radiation. It's not like you're doing one class, for example, that you might not want to do is people who, they're physicists or people who measure using radiation the thickness of roads. You know, that has nothing to do with environmental. I if I were you, I would kind of slip it into the hazardous materials cleanup in a broader sense.
Right.
And just to be safe, just to be safe.
And then I guess along with that follow-up question, the contractor for Los Alamos, NC3, they're doing the radiation legacy cleanup. You know, they're looking to hire about 2,000 technicians, environmental technicians in the next 2 years. And so, you know, we're really excited to be able to pipeline our participants into good paying jobs with them. But it is, you know, obviously it's radiation cleanup.
Right.
Primarily
well,
in that area.
Well, here's another, when we're talking about spins, and EPA wants to push as much as they can into that hazardous waste. To the extent
yeah.
you're cleaning up hazardous waste that happens to be radiated, I can see that as being, well, we could fund that because they're cleaning up hazardous materials. What could be more
okay.
hazardous than plutonium?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, again, but here's a terminology thing. As you write your grant, focus on the hazardous materials, defocus on radiation, you know, that
okay.
type of thing.
Got it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, this is Madeline again. I have kind of a follow-up question from the first part of your answer there. It's about leverage costs. So as you said just now, obviously you can't pay with the grant funds to cover construction training, the general construction training.
Right.
But we have some employers in our area who feel very strongly that their employees need to have that basis, and we have other funding for that first part. Can we count that as a leveraged cost? I wanted to say yes when I was asked that by in our meeting earlier this week, because based on the RFP, like, we could count leveraged costs for like life skills and stuff like that that the grant can't fund.
Right.
If it's part of the overall pathway, is that okay?
Well, the leverage costs are very informal at EPA, and people ask, how do I determine it? And they say, well, just put in a number that you think is about right. So they're telling me they're not really, again, the way you write this. Now, if you take a something like Cypress Mandela, they use a construction course. They send someone through construction training, and they use it as a screening method and a recruitment method. They take the best students in the construction trades, and they'll say, well, we can make you more valuable. Now that you have construction trades, we can make you even more valuable if you go through the environmental workforce development, because then you can do construction as it relates to environmental cleanup. So they're using it as a screening and assessment tool. And to some extent it is, and also to the extent that they teach health and safety in construction trades, that would be a leveraged, again,
mm-hmm.
another leverage. They just don't want you, there are other people like Youth Build that do purely construction trades. So again, try to link it to how that happens. If you're doing lead abatement, you need to have construction skills, and you need
because you
might be in confined space, and you're going to be working with tools. So that's a health and safety issue. So OSHA 10, OSHA 30, you just don't want to be, you don't want to have a course on that, like, and ladders would be okay because you have to climb, you know, that would be a construction tool also. You just don't want to have working with saws or working with, you know, power tools or something like that in there.
Not even as a leveraged cost?
I wouldn't even mention that was necessarily, I would link it to your environmental.
Okay.
As long as you could link to environmental, you're okay. If it's by itself, then you've got, you know, that
right.
issue.
Right, no. Yeah, it wouldn't be by itself. Okay,
thank you. Yeah, just want to play safe on those things.
Mm-hmm.
We, as I said, we haven't had a lot of problems with it, but I would err on the side of caution in those cases.
Right.
Well, as things, we're going to have more chances at this, and we'll be talking about it in the future. But when you go to this RFP, and if you have questions after the RFP, ask them. After you get the notes this week, try to develop your set of questions that you have, and you can ask them at the webinar. And unanswered questions you could send to Heather or myself, and we'll make sure that they're answered, and we'll kind of go from there. So,
not to sound too cynical, but it's basically the same as the old one. I don't know why it took them so long to put it out.
I already went through it.
you're
exactly right. The changes are more administrative changes in funding. It's almost identical. There's a little bit of change in who's funding what, you know, which program offices are funding what. But basically, it's the same thing. In fact, the questions and answers I'm going to send in the notes will be from last year, because they'll probably be very similar. So it is very, very similar. But please don't send in last year's grant proposal, because I don't want to make sure I tell you that, because I've been told that many times. So, but you're exactly right. Well, good luck to y'all on this start. And you're in this beautiful stage right now where you're not in a panic. You got till June 10th, you know. But let's get some of the stuff out of the way now, so it doesn't start to get panicky as you get closer to that date. Well, you all have a good week, and we'll talk to you all soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Okay.